Check. Check. Ba-ba-da-ba, ba-ba-da. Welcome to McGovern Man. I'm just very excited about our topic today.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
What could it be?
I don't know. But before we get to our topic, I just want to make sure everybody listening goes and checks out our website, themcgovernman.com. We have audio and video podcasts there. If you've missed some of our old ones, we've recently talked about Prometheus. We've got podcasts on Batman, Spider-Man coming up, and also things that non-nerds would like young adult. We had one of Fight Club, a variety of things. Our video podcasts as well. This week we've got one coming out about Michael Bay. Be sure to check out things we write. Last week James wrote a good thing about the career of Adam Sandler, which unlike most of Adam Sandler's movies, makes logical sense. Go to MacGuffinMen.com. Also, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at the MacGuffinMen, no underscores or anything, or send us emails at themacguffinmen@gmail.com. We gave Travis the week off this week for the music, so we'll get J-Dubs to kick a beat.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Raiders of the Lost Ark, a.k.a. not the one with Short Round, so you know it's not a waste of your time. And now, here are Alex and James.
Oh, that was fun.
Good to go, John.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope you have a successful career in Hollywood as a composer.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope. Did pretty good on that one, at least.
Yeah, that's a fun song.
It's a pretty great song.
And you know what?
Mm.
It's from a fun movie.
Mm. Yeah, is fun the word we're using for this one?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because when I was watching it again, and actually, we'll talk about some times that it's not so fun.
Okay.
But it's just a humdinger of a good time.
It's a rollicking good time.
It is.
Yeah. Rollicking, frolicking, all kinds of olics.
No, I mean, there are Nazis in there.
Yeah.
So that's a bit less funny.
Yeah.
But, anyway, we're talking about Indiana Jones.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Actually, I guess, at the time, only Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess they went back and changed it after the success of the other two.
Yeah, they started to put the name in front of the movie. And, I mean, a similar thing happened with Rambo. The first Rambo was only called First Blood.
Yep.
Which led to some awkward naming.
Yes.
It's the same thing. I mean, everybody knows this movie as Indiana Jones more than Raiders of the Lost Ark. I had to go through a painful amount of explaining to my roommate's girlfriend when I was explaining this movie that I was watching.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. Which one is that? I'm like, it's the one with the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones.
And all the Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Yes.
I watched it again. I mean, sometimes I always rewatch the movies when we're going to talk about them. And this one,
well, that's good.
I know. I've seen this one a few times, and I've definitely seen bits and pieces of it a whole bunch. But, I sat down and watched the whole thing through, and it's just a fun little adventure.
Oh, it's a great time.
Yeah.
It's a breezy little Saturday afternoon hangout.
Yes, and we're not the first people to note this.
No.
Harrison Ford, obviously, and Indiana Jones.
Yes.
How do you like him?
Good.
Good, not great?
He's perfect for this role, because a certain amount of not caring is important.
Yep.
And that's one of the things Harrison Ford is really good at. He brings sort of like a, I don't know, I was trying to think about, because I think my favorite moment in this movie is probably, outside of like an actual action sequence, my favorite moment in this movie is probably when he shoots the guy with the sword.
Yes.
And I just don't know how many actors could pull that off other than Harrison Ford. And I think that's cool. I like that.
And he's turning away from him before he's even dead. Like, he's so over that.
Yeah.
But he's just Han Solo in a different hat, right? Or in a hat.
Isn't that what he is most of the time?
Not in What Lies Beneath, but yes.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Every other movie.
Well, he's just really mad at Princess Leia in What Lies Beneath.
Okay, yeah, that's true. More scruffy lurking in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's why I grew a beard for this podcast.
Right.
And that's why I started doing manual labor, to be appropriately manly. I got punched by Karen Allen earlier just to bump up the authenticity.
Right on. But I guess it wasn't always Harrison Ford. And I heard they were even shying away from him because he'd been used in Star Wars and he was in 1941, which was not a big hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and George Lucas was worried about him because he was also in American Graffiti. George Lucas was worried about him becoming his Robert De Niro, I think, is or, you know, something of that sort, like just the guy that's in all those George Lucas movies.
Yeah, and they had a, I was looking over the list, and they had a lot of comedians on there, like Bill Murray and tons of people. It's fun thinking of Bill Murray as anybody, but
I know,
especially as an action hero.
Absolutely. This is possibly like one of the only movies where Bill Murray would not be an improvement on casting.
Yeah, you don't think so?
There's just such a small amount of movies that I would not be more excited to see Bill Murray in.
Yeah.
And I feel like Harrison Ford is correct.
Okay.
Bill Murray, like, it would just be so much riffing, given that it's like 1981 as well.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just prime, like, this is Stripes Bill Murray, you know? Like, it's Riff Town, Population Billy.
Yeah, but I mean, it already is a funny movie, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's one thing that struck me watching it again. I knew it wasn't going to be, I mean, there certainly is, as I said, Nazis and death and some heavy stuff at times, but
exploding heads,
melting faces. Yep. Yeah. Everything. It's a funny movie.
Oh, it's like quite funny.
Quite often they're going for the laugh when they don't need to.
Yep.
And there's nothing cuter and funnier than a monkey doing a Hitler salute.
I know, right? Yeah.
I like that. Oh yeah. We already talked about Harrison Ford, but I know, You're a Karen Allen fan, right?
I am. Yeah, how can you not be? She's enjoyable.
No, and I like her in this, but when we were kind of discussing what we wanted to touch on in this one, you mentioned that you're a big fan of her.
Yeah, I think she's really great in this movie. I like Marion. I think she's maybe the highest functioning alcoholic of all time.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, the things she pulls off after doing, like, 18 shots in this movie, really impressive.
Yeah.
I've been around a lot of drunk people and that I would not trust to save my life immediately after they finish drinking. But yeah, she's impressive. And I mean, she's got a super nice smile. I enjoy a nice smile. And she was also Scotty Small's mom in The Sandlot, so there's a lot of...
Lifetime pass.
Yeah, exactly. And she was in Animal House as well. She's super adorable in that movie.
Were you big on Indiana Jones when you were young? Because I think I saw my first one on a field trip in grade 8, which, I mean, is, I know that's young, but a lot of my friends are on this movie from like the age of 4. So yeah. I was really late to this.
Yeah, I wasn't as late as you, but I can't remember an age, but I definitely remember the gunfight in the bar in Nepal being one of like the first action scenes I like rewound.
Yeah. You know? That's fun.
Because I was having a gunfight phase, I think, when I figured out the gunfights were awesome.
Yep.
On film.
Yes.
We do not endorse gunfighting.
Nazis.
Yeah, don't endorse those either.
Don't endorse those.
Yeah. Just list things we don't endorse.
Nazis. No, I have a question about Nazis.
Okay.
Good bad guys or the best bad guys?
It's hard to talk. Like, what is it? The devil? Like, what's higher up on the chain?
I know, but it's not. I don't know. It's not even that they're just the most evil, but they're all well organized and everybody knows who they are. And I don't know. I'm a big fan of the Nazi bad guy.
Yeah, no, it's great. It works well because I mean, most action movies they feel they have to go for the foreign villain, and this is one where it's just like, okay, foreign, that makes sense. Yep. That's fine. It's not just a Russian person, you know, with an accent. It's a German person who was a Nazi.
Yeah, it's 1936 and Hitler's still running around.
Yeah.
And we even get Hitler later in the series.
Yeah, in Last Crusade.
Good for that. Okay, so I have a question for you about this movie. You kind of talked about the middle of it. I have a question about the ending.
Oh. This is a brief podcast, all right.
No, but we don't really spend too much time doing a synopsis, so
yeah.
Well, I'd get your opinions on the ending, and then I have some more general questions
okay.
for you.
Well, and yeah, it's not like this is a meaty film, you know? It's like action scene, dialogue, action scene, dialogue.
We said gunshot, Karen Allen drinking, and Nazis.
Yeah.
That's pretty much a synopsis of the
movie. Pretty close.
Yeah. A chase scene, but we'll talk about that
too. Yeah.
The ending of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel a need to mention this when it applies to the movie. There is a MacGuffin in this film.
Yes.
The Lost Ark. The Ark of the Covenant, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the whole action of the movie.
Yeah.
Very much a classic MacGuffin. We learn about it in the first 6 minutes. And we're chasing it for the next 80. And then it gets put away. And we move on.
Good times, MacGuffin.
Yeah. What do you think about that? I mean, it's the classic MacGuffin use, but how do you feel about the ending? In a few ways. I mean, what do you... the trope of the gigantic warehouse, for one, that we see in some other things.
I love the gigantic warehouse.
Yeah.
Such a big fan.
Okay. Yeah. Please tell me about why you love that so much.
I don't know. I just like the idea that they're like, because I mean, it adds like just such silly little element of government intrigue. It's like, oh, we just sent you after this so we could put it away so that nobody else can get it.
You
know? And that's basically it. And it's just sort of like, well, we went through all of this for like some, you know, big government people or something of that sort. And it's just sort of like, it's everything Indiana Jones isn't for naught, I suppose, but it's not for what he expected it to be. Like, he thought it would be in a museum or something.
Yeah, that's kind of his whole thing, is the museum end of everything he finds.
Indiana Jones, very pro-museum.
Yes. Well, and I was looking at kind of the, you know, it is something that we do see in a lot of movies and TV and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying to get to some other people's readings on it. And yeah, you said it's kind of a little government intrigue. A lot of people look at it as kind of a comment on government ineptitude. Like, they're just going to, the best way to get rid of something is to have the government be responsible for it. And they're going to catalog it and then lose it and never use it. Mm-hmm. And that'll be the end of it. I don't know. I'd never come across that excuse for it before. And I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of a cheap way out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's this object that totally changes the whole world. I mean, not everybody knows about it, but it has the power to, you know, change everything, and unexplained power. And then it just kind of gets wrapped up with a neat little bow, put away. That's that.
Almost literally wrapped up with a neat little bow.
But I just mean, it's funny that it's something that is so powerful throughout the movie, and then it just wouldn't make any sense in continuity.
Mm-hmm.
For this thing to still be kicking around. Yeah.
Well, I think the idea is that, you know, if it's in this warehouse, then other people don't have it. I think that's the idea.
Yeah. Like burying a Decepticon in the water.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to destroy it.
Yeah, don't make it corrode.
Just put it somewhere.
It won't come back. Don't worry.
This is an action movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's an adventure movie as well.
Yeah.
Those two should go hand in hand. Yeah. You don't like the term adventure?
Well, I mean, if it's an action movie, chances are it's also an adventure movie.
Yeah.
Like, so, where's the line?
Well, that was a question. What makes it an adventure movie?
I think generally it's the sand is what makes something an adventure movie.
It seems to be
movie.
Outside of America or like one or more country, or more than one country, you're officially in an adventure zone.
Yeah. Like, because I think, you know, like, let's say John Woo's movies, early Hong Kong movies like The Killer and Hard Boiled, those are definitely action movies.
Yeah.
But they're not adventure movies because there's not a lot of sand involved. I think there's maybe one scene on a beach in Hard Boiled, but it's like your hero can get covered with blood in an action movie, but once there's sand or dirt as well,
all that blood
out the window, it's an adventure movie.
Welcome
now
to the sand venture genre. Yeah. This kind of is the
James is choking on sand, by the way. This is an adventure
podcast. Podventure. This is kind of the quintessential adventure movie, though.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, as far as one that exists in reality, I think the Star Wars is a quintessential sci-fi adventure.
Yes, that's true.
And sand.
And I really hadn't watched any Indiana Jones for a while, but rewatching it again, just, I guess it's just because it's so much history and artifacts and intrigue and chasing people around. You get kind of like a Dan Brown, Da Vinci Code kind of vibe to it.
Yep.
Obviously as a kid, I never saw that because those wouldn't have been around then, but it kind of struck me as a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And some National Treasure in there for for any excuse to mention Nick Cage.
You mean there's a little bit of Indiana Jones in National Treasure? And by a little
might
bit,
argue that.
By a little bit, I mean a lot.
Other than National Treasure, what are the kind of inspirations and sources for this movie? We'll just put National Treasure aside and National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
We're just going to table those.
Put a pin in that.
George Lucas has always said, Saturday afternoon matinee movies that he watched as a kid. I don't know what those are necessarily because I'm significantly younger than George Lucas and have way fewer chins.
This is true.
Or sorry, I think maybe like he just has no chin. I think
he has one big chin, doesn't he?
It's just this weird, like,
it's perfectly rounded.
Yeah, it's very odd. It's a little too much edge feathering going on in his chin.
It stops at the bottom of his belly. Like, it's just a solid round shape covered in sand.
Yeah. So much sand in this room. Such an adventure podcast. So much coffee.
Yeah, you're right, though. That's kind of what they always say was their inspiration. Again, I wouldn't know the exact ones either because of the age. But
have we mentioned that Steven Spielberg was the actual director of this movie yet?
And not George Lucas?
Yeah. Okay. Just to clarify, I don't know that we've actually said that. Steven Spielberg directed this.
Do people think George Lucas directed
this? No, we've just been talking about Lucas a lot without mentioning Spielberg.
I got you. Yeah. I guess they said Lucas did some second unit stuff on this and was involved in kind of the genesis of it and the scripting of it.
Yeah, and he's a producer. He co-wrote the story. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess what I understood is that the idea to do this kind of came out of the same conversations as Star Wars did.
Yep. And do you know did you read the story about how George Lucas pitched it to Steven Spielberg?
Was it when he would list like three things that he wants in it?
No, not that. Okay. It's when George Lucas went on a vacation to like Hawaii or something.
Yeah.
And this is just before Star Wars was open, you know, and that's sort of like a tradition he has to get away from stress.
Yeah,
and
when he's about to open a movie, he just leaves. Yeah.
And Spielberg joined him because he was getting away from Close Encounters for a bit. And apparently George Lucas pitched it to Spielberg while they were making a sandcastle.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Which is so funny to me. Could you imagine, like, you and I ever making a sandcastle together? Like, do grown men make sandcastles with each other?
I know.
I just think it's so hilarious and whimsical that is the story.
Well, and I guess they said that a lot of their ideas that they actually made it in were from a Uncle Scrooge comic book. Yep. Too. Yep. So between playing with sandcastles and reading comic books for children, you can be a future film director. Yeah.
There's a lot of grape juice involved as well, I'm sure.
Too early for Pogs, but had it been the right time, definitely would have had some good slammers in there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but I guess Flash Gordon was the one that kind of inspired Star Wars, and then this one was kind of just more of the other adventure.
Mm. Roy Rogers seems like a thing.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. and I guess it started off, this character of Indiana Jones started off a bit darker than he ended up being.
Yeah, he was supposed to be an alcoholic, I think.
Yeah, I think they were kind of going between having him be like a James Bond kind of playboy and then a darker, more alcoholic person.
Yeah, well, I read something somewhere that the scene where... What's Denholm Elliott's character's name? The guy who like comes to see Indiana Jones. Basically, like Indiana Jones gets the artifacts for him. The British dude
comes to see him in the classroom.
Anyways, when he comes to see him at the house to tell Indy that, you know, he can go after the Lost Ark, Indy's wearing like a house coat and, you know, he's just very dressed down. And the idea was that there's a cut scene where he was in bed with a lady before that.
Oh, really?
And that's the idea behind that. And they just sort of cut it. They thought he shouldn't be a womanizer.
Hmm. So. Playing it safe for the kids, eh?
Yeah. No, they're just trying to hide it from Marion. They don't want her to know.
Right.
But she knows now.
Well, and did you see that quote from him saying that
who is him?
Spielberg.
Yep.
The guy who directed it, not George Lucas.
Right.
he said he basically shot of it thought of it as shooting a B movie. Like he said he didn't put any more seriousness into it than what he said the old Republic shorts, which are those shorts, the Sunday afternoon shorts. Do you see that come across?
Yeah. But I mean I'm in the camp that doesn't find a whole lot of depth to a lot of Spielberg movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when we talked about Close Encounters, all of the stuff I found in it was something I put into it about movie mortality, which just clearly didn't exist for him at that point. But,
yeah.
And Jaws has a lot of people that will analyze it, and same with E.T., but I disagree with a lot of that analysis.
Okay.
And yeah, I think Raiders is more of a B movie than, you know, there's less effort put into it thematically, I think. But, it's not, there's not that big of a difference between a lot of Spielberg movies and this, I don't think.
Okay.
As far as that.
And yeah, it's pretty, like, I mean, there is some dark stuff to it, but yeah, thematically nothing too heavy, really.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get too much across.
Yeah, like, the Nazis are the villains, but we're not really examining Nazis.
Yeah, no, no, no. Yeah, and I saw a quote from him saying if we had more time and money, it would have been a more of a pretentious movie. And yeah. So they're happy they should kind of shot it the way they did and got this sort of lighter result from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
There are a couple things about it that do make it kind of old school. I don't mean 80s, but pre-80s.
Okay.
The hat?
The hat. The fact that it takes place in 1936.
That's right. Yeah. I guess they did a lot of sound effects just using Foley artists, mm-hmm. like they used to do on the radio, and probably yeah. those shorts that we were talking about too. That truck scene, they shot at 20 frames per second, which is kind of like shooting in fast motion, which is, you know, when you watch old Westerns and those kinds of movies, you see that it looks sped up.
Yep.
That's a classic thing that they do, and you do see it in this one. It mm-hmm. looks a little silly sometimes.
Oh,
but...
yeah. And I mean, a lot of Jackie Chan movies did that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to make his kicks look faster.
Yeah. We see that in the truck chase scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Want to talk about that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, truck chase, yeah.
What do you want me to say about it other than yeah? Because it's awesome.
Do you like it?
Yes.
Oh, I was hoping for a yeah.
Nope. I have to be more eloquent. I have my final critique has to be more eloquent.
Okay. What's so good about it? That's in a good movie and it kind of gets wrapped up and people calling it good because it's in a movie they really like? Or
it's that...
It still holds up?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's mostly the stunt where he is under the truck. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. It's so well done and like... It hurts to watch it, and I just think it's great. It's a great stunt.
Yeah, and they take a couple small shortcuts. I mean, they raise the truck, they dig out the center of the road. I mean, some things like that.
But yeah, of course.
It's still very...
They're trying very to make it safe.
Yeah, they're not trying to kill the star of their movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess he got some bruised ribs on that and kind of beat himself up, but...
Well, and I mean, it's not Harrison Ford for all of it. The majority of the stuff that's actually under the truck is not Harrison Ford. Right. But it's just sort of like when he's behind, like holding on with the whip, being dragged behind the car. There's some shots where it's Harrison Ford. Yeah. And that's where he bruises ribs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruised ribs, yeah.
Bruised ribs, yeah. Okay, so I've kind of touched on this a few times that it's lighthearted.
Yeah.
And funny.
Yep.
And jokey.
Yep.
And
alcohol doesn't affect people in it.
Right. But we do get some darker, heavier stuff. And I mean, I guess just compared to the movies and the shorts that inspired it, it's heavier than a Saturday afternoon matinee that you'd want young kids to see.
Yeah, there are parts of this movie that are kind of terrifying.
Yeah, and this is, I guess the original edit was... got an R rating.
Yeah. This edit should have an R rating.
You think so?
It's ludicrous to me that this is a PG rated movie.
Okay, what stuff? All the face melting at the end?
Dude getting shot right in the middle of the head and bleeding out of his head from the bullet wound.
Yeah.
The horror scene that Marion has after they break through, like when they're trapped in the, and then it ends with like that horrifying shot of the giant snake in the mouth of the skeleton.
Yeah. That's gross.
Alfred Molina's corpse at the beginning of the movie. The face melting, the face exploding, the head exploding, the entire head, not just the face. I think the melting face is way grosser than the exploding head.
It looks a little cheesy for me to be grossed out by it, but I could imagine if I was like 12 years old or something, that would be really freaky. Yeah.
No, this is an R-rated movie.
And I don't have a particular fear of snakes, but when it's that big snake coming out of the skeleton's mouth...
Oh, it's just...
That gives me the willies.
It's just such a horrifying shot.
Yeah.
It's just like, this will do this to you. You know? It will turn you into this.
Yeah, and... I mean, I know I've mentioned a lot of times that it is light, but there is some very gross and vulgar stuff in this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think this is news to anybody, but this movie was a big hit.
Yeah.
Like, huge.
Yeah.
Not just that it inspired, whatever, 3 or 2.5 sequels, depending on who you ask.
2 sequels and a prequel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still, adjusted for inflation, still one of the top 20 movies ever.
Okay.
Biggest movie in 1981. This was huge. And when you're making this much money, kids are going to this.
Mm-hmm.
And as you pointed out, you feel that this probably should still have an R rating.
Yeah, I should. I mean, it should have an R rating, but I'm saying that just, you know, like kids would still see it if it had an R rating, you know?
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, you talk about movie rating systems a lot and how they're kind of a joke, and this movie kind of proves that they were a joke back then, yeah. too.
Yeah. Well, I was reading some reviews of this movie, and kind of, like, I always like reading how they reviewed at the time and then how they get reviewed after, mm-hmm. and it's awesome when critics just have to eat their words because the film community has decided this is a great movie, even though it got one star when it came out. So I was looking at someone who, and I wish I had his name, but I forgot to write it down. I think he works for the New York Times. Anyway, he said that this was the beginning of the decline of the G-rated family film.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, we still have G-rated movies, but the big blockbusters aren't kids' movies or family movies anymore. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's true? That this is really what set it off and that's really something that's over with?
I'm too young to say. Because, I mean, G, you know, what constitutes a G rating has changed since that time.
Yeah.
You know? But, I mean, it certainly allowed for more disgusting things to happen in movies that are deemed kid-friendly. I mean, arms get chopped off in Star Wars, which is 1977, so... And that's pretty grotesque.
Yeah, it's one arm. I think this definitely has...
If it was two arms, it would be gross.
One's just hot. Two's disgusting.
Do you mean hot as in arousing?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I do. No, but I guess...
James McKenna, aroused by Mos Eisley Cantina. So that's called?
Yeah, it is. Okay. No, but I think, like, just now, I guess, the thing to do for a big blockbuster, and I think what this guy's arguing since 1981, is to make a movie for a 16 or 17-year-old, and young kids are going to see it anyway.
Yeah.
and I think they like feeling older and grown up and cool, and mm-hmm. that seems to be... what the going theory is.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Okay. You brought up something that I wanted to spend some time on. It's
Karen Allen Smile.
Karen Allen Smile.
Yeah.
10,000 words or less. How adorable is it?
It's pretty adorable. She's got the eyes to match.
Yeah, eyes, yeah.
It's a good combo. I don't know. She's just a tough lady. I like her. I like that she punches Indiana Jones instead of slaps him. I think that's a nice little touch.
That's cool.
That's the difference between tough as shit and just, you know, yeah. Whatever.
Some sassy broad.
Yeah. Well, she's not worried about hurting her hand. That's the difference between a slap and a punch.
Yeah. No, I want to talk about this movie's proximity to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 1981.
Yeah. Quick point before we get into that. That has nothing to do with Karen Allen. Do you hear the Star Wars laser noise when the plane starts up at the very beginning of the movie? Right after Indy's trying to get away from Belloc.
Belloc
No,
I haven't heard that.
Like, when the plane starts up, it just sounds like Star Wars laser to me. But I mean, I haven't seen Star Wars in a long time, so
okay. But well, I know a lot of the same people would have been involved.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, the guy that did the screenplay for Raiders, his first screenplay before this, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, is the second screenplay he made or wrote. His name's Lawrence Kasdan, and the first screenplay he wrote was The Empire Strikes Back. So that's a nice little twofer.
Oh, wow, not bad.
Yeah.
Getting paid, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, no, anyways, continue.
We're still on the subject of Star Wars. You didn't derail us. It's just, so first Star Wars came out in 77. Massive hit, like, you know, made the blockbuster, arguably. Really changed everything up. And then this is 4 years later. Mm-hmm. So we have to assume they started making this a few years before this came out, obviously. Do you want to just talk about the connection and comparisons between the two? Anything they have in common, anything different? I mean, you said that Star Wars still had the arm cutting off. I'd say that Star Wars overall is less violent and gross.
It's less gross. I don't know. It's necessarily less violent. I would imagine more people die in Star Wars.
The body count's higher. But, I mean, that's...
Alderaan dies.
Yeah, and the Death Star blows up. But we don't see things. We don't see a lot of gore.
Mm-hmm.
We see that arm.
Yep.
We see some, like, charred corpses. But Raiders of the Lost Ark is definitely worse.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're very similar films in structure. They're both they're journey films.
Yeah.
Harrison
Ford.
Yes.
John Williams.
Yep, that's true.
Some Lucas action in there.
Yep.
Lawrence
Kasdan. Oh no, Lawrence Kasdan had nothing to do with New Hope. My apologies.
There you go. dressing up like the bad guy, like just a lot of the classic journey things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, structurally they're very similar, and like the beats are the same pretty much. And yeah,
yeah, I think they just kind of figured out they had a good thing going with Star Wars and very much recycled it. I mean, we talked about how the source material, I mean, the like not the source material, but the inspiration, those shorts. I mean, it's coming around the same time, but just a different product of that same environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just watching this again with Star Wars in mind, just so many things in common. And yeah, as you said, just the beats and structurally, it's very much the same thing. And mm-hmm. the strong female, stronger female.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, that's all. Okay. I just wanted to point out how similar they were, sure. because these are things that when I was in grade 8, I wasn't picking up on, but now is very, very clear to me.
Fair enough. All right. Well, then I guess the next question is, which do you like better, A New Hope or Raiders of the Lost Ark? Yeah,
impossible.
You have to watch one of them
for the rest of my life.
Or no, right, it's you just watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, so you'd say A New Hope, but yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean,
make up your criteria.
Yeah. Raiders is just so much fun.
Yep.
The first Star Wars isn't as fun.
Mm-hmm.
I was a way bigger Star Wars kid than Indiana Jones by billion parsecs, so it's really hard to compare the two. And yeah, I just watched it so much as a kid. I still would probably take Star Wars over it, because it's more out there and it's more fantastical, and despite there being less sand, I think it's more of an adventure.
Okay.
I mean, there is sand in Star Wars, I know this, but not as much, I don't think.
Plus power converters, you're such a big fan of power converters.
Oh, yeah. No, Temple of Doom, Raiders of the Lost Ark is lots of fun and probably funnier as well, comedically. But I would take A New Hope, probably, because Luke Skywalker is so much more likable than Indiana Jones.
Such a better actor.
I'm not.
There it is. Nice work.
Hey-o. I assume you're Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
You don't really like the first Star Wars that much, do you?
No, I like it. I just like Raiders better.
Yeah, and you like Empire Strikes Back better.
Yeah, exactly. That's my Star Wars movie.
After Attack of the Clones?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I figured that was implied. Anytime you've got Yoda flipping, you know, it's obviously.
So many flails. Yeah.
Not enough, I think.
We talked about how it's a kind of recycling a bit of the Star Wars thing.
Yep.
And it was a big, big hit, as I said. And again, I was reading reviews of the time and reviews later on, and this movie is still very much loved. Like,
yeah, it's well liked.
Yeah, it's critically, people are, I mean, they don't put it up on a pedestal like this was an amazing creative thing. You know, we've talked about how thematically it is pretty shallow, but they talk about that they really do love it. And yeah, it was nothing too deep, but yeah, it's an amazing wild ride and it's so much fun. Do you think a blockbuster is ever going to be looked at that positively critically again, or
no?
Is blockbuster just more of a pejorative term now that it has this negative connotation, and does this kind of get some infinite pioneer cred because it was so early?
It gets a lot of that infinite pioneer cred.
Trail cred.
Yeah. The I feel like also just nothing will get the love that something in the 80s could get. Just because of all the, we just have so many more options of things to watch now.
Oh, and that's what it is?
That's a big part of it, but I think you are correct with the way blockbusters are identified now. I mean, what was the last blockbuster that was unified or universally agreed upon as good? You know, and I mean, not that Raiders didn't have dissenters.
Like, yeah,
I think it's Avatar is the movie I'm talking about. Despite, I'll let it be known that neither of us.
No. I know what you mean by this question. Oddly enough, I think Fast Five kind of carved out this little spot where critics, and that one really threw me for a loop, it did get as much critical love. And I think that it's, I didn't even realize this when I was asking that question, but I think it is one of those movies where no one was saying like, oh, fantastic piece of art, but it was like, hey, this is the genre. They had a lot of fun with it. You're going to have fun watching it. It's certainly not to the level that Raiders of the Lost Ark is.
See, I think something, a huge key Fast Five is, lowered expectations because there were four terrible movies before there was Fast Five.
Right.
I think I agree with how how Fast Five was received by critics was fairly similar to the way Raiders was received. But yeah, it's a different world. It's because like,
and so you're not just saying that, oh, we can't love a blockbuster like that now because we need to wait 30 years and it'll have that nostalgia thing. You're just saying that because nothing's an event like Star Wars was or like Raiders was. It's things are too split to really unify everybody and to bring that love to it critically.
Exactly. And and it's just there's so much to see and there's just so many more action movies now. Yeah. And not to mention the fact that most of those action movies still use the beats that in Indiana Jones and Star Wars used. And it's just sort of it's a combination of Pioneer and a combination of, you know, like in 1981, Total Recall and Bourne Legacy are not opening on the same day in 2012. Yeah,
that's right.
That's what's happening. And yeah, it's only going to get more like that, you know? So yeah, but I think the way people talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark actually made me really think about Ferris Bueller. It's just sort of one of those just universally liked movies. And we talked about this when we talked about John Hughes movies back in October, I think. And it's just universally liked. Karen Allen kind of reminds me a little bit of Mia Sara, even though she's Karen Allen's tougher. Yeah, it's just sort of like a movie that it's weird that you don't like it. You know, it's just one of those movies where people are like, you don't like Ferris Bueller?
Yeah.
Are you sure you watch Ferris Bueller?
Are you thinking of the same thing?
Yeah.
Are you thinking of the band Save Ferris? Because you don't have to like Save Ferris. However,
are you thinking of Inspector Gadget?
It's like a reverse Hootie and the Blowfish. Like you have to justify, like, everyone's going to be against you from the get go. You really have to have some stuff to back it up if you're going to take that opinion. Got anything else to say about Raiders?
What is your favorite
action? Yeah, Raiders. Yeah.
Not going to peek. what is your favorite part in Raiders?
Monkey Hitler salute for the win.
We should explain the sword fight.
The story behind it.
Yeah, because it's a funny story. There was supposed to be an elaborate sword fight between Harrison Ford and the gentleman with the sword.
Yep.
Dysentery had sort of struck the crew.
We talked about how Harrison had kind of been beat up with some of the stunts.
Yeah,
and I guess he. I think his knee, or he tore some ligaments in his knee or something and didn't want to get healthcare over there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And as you said, there was just illnesses kind of sweeping through the whole crew. This big fight was set up.
Yeah. And Harrison Ford was just feeling so crappy that day. And he's just like, let's just shoot the fucker. And that's what he said to Spielberg.
Yeah. And I had heard that story so many times without the fucker part. Mm-hmm. Like I had heard just a cleaned up version of like, oh, I'll just shoot him or something like that. And only researching this podcast did I see the F-bomb in there.
Yeah.
Like right on it.
Totally makes sense.
Oh no, absolutely.
Such a grouchy man.
Yeah.
It's a great moment. I think it's so funny. Like even knowing it was coming, I still laugh.
Oh, it's such a good laugh.
Yeah.
And again, I think kind of summing up the jokey yet dark tone of this movie, some guy just gets shot.
Yeah.
You go, Indy.
Just the beat is so good. It's such a good the timing's so great. What's your favorite action sequence in this movie?
I think it's the truck.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I hadn't seen this movie in a while, and I remember that there was a truck scene. But yeah, it's fun. And not even just the stunt of him going under, but pretty much everything around it, and Nazis dying.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be my favorite. Again, not afraid of snakes, but I think they did a good job of creeping me out, the snakes.
Yeah, definitely.
And... the other creepy part is that girl with the writing on her eyelids at the start.
Yeah, that's so funny.
It's funny, but it weirds me out.
And that shot, like, before that, where it's going across the whole classroom and all the girls have their heads on their hands.
Yeah.
And they're just like, ah, it's the best.
Oh, and if we're talking, I guess that gunshot thing is probably the piece of trivia for this movie.
Gunshot thing?
Oh, yeah. Shooting the swordsman. The fly eating?
Yeah, it's so funny.
I think that's at least number two.
Yeah.
Fighting for number one.
Yeah, no, that's gangster right
there. What happens for those people who haven't seen it?
It's when, those people that haven't seen it?
Who haven't noticed
it. Oh, okay. I was like, I don't think those people exist that haven't seen Raiders. When Belloc, or when Indiana Jones catches up to everybody and they've kidnapped Marion, and he's got, Indiana Jones has a rocket launcher that he's got aimed at the arc, and he's threatening to shoot it if they don't give him Mirian, which is a terrible plan, by the way.
Because
if he blows up the Raider, if he blows up the arc, they shoot Mirian immediately, and then he doesn't have another missile, and then they shoot him immediately.
They shoot him.
So, terrible plan.
They call his bluff, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But anyways, as Belloc is talking to him, a fly lands like on his lip and just crawls into his mouth, and Belloc just doesn't even blink. It's just like, yep, I'm gonna eat this fly. I'm Belloc. I'm an evil archaeologist.
Well, and that's not my understanding is that that actor just straight up ate that fly.
Yeah,
just out of nowhere.
Belloc don't give a fuck.
Rock on.
Yeah.
Fly eating. Yeah.
Is your goal to make it harder for me to edit this? My favorite action scene, I think, is the airplane.
At the start?
No.
Oh, okay. Nazi fight?
Yeah, we're giant Nazi muscle fight. I think that sequence is so great. Just the way it's all set up and, you know, how they have the airplane just sort of going in a small circle after the stoppers moved.
Yeah.
I just, the music in that is so great. And
yeah, I think that is an underappreciated scene.
Just good.
Just because the other scenes people love so much.
Exactly. And I think it's the most creative of the action sequences. I think you could make an argument for the very, very opening. But I think, like, the airplane is just something I haven't seen before. I hadn't seen it before because I was like 10 or whatever. But,
yeah.
And I haven't seen anything like that since. I've seen things like the truck sequence.
Yeah. And there's the gun and getting in her way, and there's two of them, mm-hmm. and there's like a fist fight going on the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is a good one.
I thought you'd bring up more about the how much of this movie involves like puzzles and stuff like that. You seem to get a kick out of that stuff.
I do.
Mean, it's simple, but
I think maybe that's what I meant by some of the Dan Brown stuff.
Okay, fair enough.
Like piecing stuff together like that. Yes, I do enjoy a good puzzle.
Okay. Fair enough. I just wanted to make sure that hasn't changed.
Make sure everyone knows that I'm a huge loser. If they didn't already.
I try to make it make sure people know. So thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our video podcast this week. It'll be out in a couple days. It's about somebody that actually worked on Raiders of the Lost Ark, Michael Bay, and who said Raiders of the Lost Ark was gonna suck. He has admitted he was wrong.
Yep.
So we've got the old school blockbuster Raiders of the Lost Ark today, and you can come back and as we talk about the modern blockbuster in video form, with explosions and Transformers. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter @themacguffinmen.